From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. President Barack Obama came to office as an inspiration, but also as a politician with a tough team and a laser focus on the bottom line. Now he's in a real battle for re-election. Mitt Romney has not come limping from the Republican primary fight. Team Obama is strapping in for the ride. This hour on Point, inside the Obama campaign and how it hopes to win. You can join the conversation. How's it look to you? Tight race? Toss up? Something else? What's working for Obama here? What's working against Obama? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. We're going to get deep inside this campaign today. Let's hear a little bit of it right here. May 5th rally, Columbus, Ohio, marked the kickoff of the presidential campaign for re-election. Barack Obama cast Mitt Romney as someone looking backward and himself as someone who could lead America forward.
That's what we're fighting for, Ohio. A bold America. A competitive America. A generous America. A forward-looking America. Where everybody has a chance to make of their life what they will. That's what made us the envy of the world. That's what makes us great. That's why I'm running again for President of the United States.
And there is the hope part. It's 2012. Here's the fear part. Bain Capital took over GST Steel in Kansas City, 1993. Hundreds of workers lost their jobs. The company ultimately declared bankruptcy. Here, a former steel worker from the company talks in an Obama ad about Romney.
He's running for president, and if he's going to run the country the way he ran our business, I wouldn't want him there. He would be so out of touch with the average person in this country. How could you care? How could you care for the average working person if you feel that way?
The fear. And here's Mitt Romney looking at President Obama, looking to be reelected. This was in Nevada on Tuesday.
Gosh, it was only 3.5, 4 years ago that Barack Obama was campaigning here. And I know he raised a lot of people's hopes. He was talking about making things better, and he was going to bring the country together. And, I know he had a lot of you folks thinking things were going to get real good. And he's been a big disappointment, hasn't he?
Mitt Romney, not so big on Obama hope either. Joining us now from New York is John Heilemann. He's national affairs editor for New York Magazine and plugged in to the gills. Co-author with Mark Halperin of Game Change, Obama and the Clintons, McCain and Palin in the Race of a Lifetime, now an HBO film. His big article in this week's New York Magazine goes deep in the Obama campaign's 2012 strategy and outlook. It's headlined Hope the Sequel. John Heilemann, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Tom, it is always a pleasure to be with you.
So it's not just hope this time. Where's the fear come in?
Well, you got it pretty much right there. I mean, it's the Obama campaign realizes that in order to win this race, which, you know, if you looked at every prevailing objective metric, especially the economic variables, it's a tough race for the president to get reelected under these circumstances. Unemployment's never been below 8% in the 3.5 years he's been in office. Wage growth is stagnant and declining. The right track, wrong track perceptions of the country, about two-thirds of the people in the country still think the country's on the wrong track. To win this race, they are very clear that what they need to do is disqualify Mitt Romney, and the way in which they want to do that is on multiple fronts. But the fear element of it is the fear of what the Republican Party represents and the way in which, in their view, Mitt Romney would take America backwards rather than forwards. The Obama campaign concedes that there's not been as much progress as they'd like to see, but they feel as though we're on the right track, and if you stick with us, things will get better. You don't want to go back to the same policies that led us into the depths of misery that we were in 2008, 2009, and those policies are the Republican Party's policies in their view, and they are Mitt Romney's policies and what Mitt Romney represents and believes.
There's a message piece to this, as you write, Hope and Fear. There's a big demographics piece, and we'll look at that. You've spent a lot of time with, David Axelrod, the senior campaign strategist, and Jim Messina, the campaign manager, David Plouffe, senior White House advisor. You've been out in Chicago in the heart of the Obama campaign. I mean, give us a sense, as candidly as they've shared it with you, of how they are shaping up the race and the president's challenge at this time.
Well, you're right. This was about a month's worth of work. And as you know, because of Game Change and because of my coverage in 2008, I know these guys pretty well. This is the second time we've been around this track. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't a senior official in the campaign or in the White House who works on politics that I didn't talk to for the piece, almost all of them on the record. So, they were consistently – there are a number of things to say. They were consistently incredibly confident about the president's prospects, and we'll talk about that. You mentioned the demographic piece. We'll talk about the electoral map and why that is. But I think given how close the race is, I think one of the big surprises is how they are not arrogant and they're not totally sure, 100%. They're not comfortable. They're nervous. But they also are very confident that they have a case to make that they can win on and that they have more routes to 270 electoral votes than Mitt Romney does. And that gives them a lot of confidence going forward. Like I say, they know that they need to – and this is where some of this demographics and economic stuff comes in. But the race is in some ways a contest between demographics and economics. The demographics – the growing segments of the electorate, minorities, particularly Hispanics, women, particularly unmarried college-educated women, young voters. The president has substantial leads with all those groups. They are the ascendant forces in the American electorate. And if you look at the swing states, the president has an advantage in those states because of his lead in those with those groups. He has a lead with those groups partly because of the work that he did in 2008 to build that coalition, which is a different kind of coalition for the Democrats than they've had in the past, but also because of the things that Mitt Romney said and did over the course of the Republican nomination fight, which caused him a lot of harm with some of those groups. They feel like if they can keep their lead large with those groups and then on the central issue, the economy, go about the process, as I said before, of discrediting Romney to the point where – I mean the key thing is that they know that if the race is a referendum on Barack Obama's economic stewardship, they will probably lose. So they need to make this race a choice between Mitt Romney's vision and values on economics and the president's vision and values on economics. They think they can win that race with the other things built in that we just talked about in terms of their demographic advantages.
So there's framing here. Who frames it around what issues? There's also mechanics and operational power. I mean, when they look out from the Prudential Tower there in Chicago at the Romney campaign, what's their biggest fear or set of fears? So you say they are nervous. They're not arrogant this time. They see it could go against them. What's the biggest fear or set of fears?
One Prudential Plaza is a tall building, and they're high up in it, but they can't quite see Boston from there.
Lake Michigan.
But metaphorically, they can.
Where Mitt Romney's headquarters, as we should point out.
Mm-hmm. Correct, up in Boston, right? Mm-hmm. So, there are two things they worry about, and one thing has a bunch of subparticles in it, right? Mm-hmm. The first thing they worry about is exogenous variables, right? The stuff that they can't really control anymore. What happens on the jobs front over the next 6 months? The first Friday of every month, we get a jobs report. Do those get stronger? Do they get weaker? Do they go in the tank?
Yep.
They worry about Europe and what the possibility of a European implosion in the Eurozone could do to the American economy. They worry about Iran. They worry about energy prices. They worry about a bunch of stuff that are pretty much outside their control. And almost all of those things are downside risk. There's not that great a likelihood that you're going to get a positive October surprise. They got that when they killed Osama bin Laden last year. So
they got it in 08 in a terrible way when the economy just tanked on the trail to the election.
Correct. The financial crisis and Obama's performance in 2008 during the financial crisis, especially in contrast to John McCain's, was really what won him the election in a lot of ways. So the exogenous variables all basically downside risk for them. So they worry about those things, but they're kind of out of their control. The second thing they worry about, and David Plouffe, I quote in the piece saying that in purely political terms, he worries about this almost as much as what the economy is going to do in the next 3 or 4 months, is the financial disparity between them and the collective Republican side. So you know that the president raises money, Mitt Romney raises money. The Republican Party raises money, the Democratic Party raises money. If you take those piles of money, and then you add in the outside money, the super PAC money on the conservative side and on the liberal side with labor unions and the president's kind of sanctioned super PAC.
Right.
If you add all that money up together, they believe, as does almost every Republican that I've spoken to, they think that they, the Obama team, believe they are going to get outspent. And they're not going to get outspent by a little. They're going to get outspent by 20 or 30 or 40%.
So in maybe spite of the fact that we heard about a $1 billion Obama campaign early on?
Yes. Well, the Obama campaign was rather foolish in letting that number get around because it's helped depress some of their fundraising. And the president's having a harder time raising money than anyone expected him to. That's not to say he's not going to raise a lot of money. Mm-hmm. He's going to set records. He's going to raise a lot of money. But because of the Republican super PAC forces, which are so massively outpacing the super PACs and the independent expenditures on the Democratic side, you're looking at probably, again, ballpark figures, Democrats in toto spending about $1 billion, Republicans in toto spending about $1.3, $1.4 billion. Now, you never want to get outspent when you're a candidate in an election, but if you're an incumbent president, there's never been an incumbent president who's been outspent in his reelection effort. The president's now staring down the barrel of getting outspent, and again, significantly outspent. It's a world that none of us have any concept of what is going to – what the implications of that are going to be. $2.5 billion getting spent in 9 or 10 states.
The swing states, you've said people are saying if you live in one of those states, give your television away for a few months. It's going to be poison.
Yeah. Yeah, Jim Messina, the campaign manager for Barack Obama, said, you know, you might want to give your television set to a friend because all you're going to see is negative ads from the middle of the summer through to Election Day. So we don't know. I mean, there's a lot to say about what about the various complexities of that and how that spending is going to work and whether what impact it's going to have. We can talk about that in more detail if you want. But if you ask what the president's people are afraid of, they're afraid of that. They're afraid of getting outspent. And in a very, very, very close race, a 30 or 40% disadvantage in terms of spending could mean the difference between winning and losing.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Obama re-election campaign up against a real challenge and a pile of pro-Romney money, how David Axelrod and company hope to get it done. John Heilman is with us. He's national affairs editor at New York Magazine, out with a big piece, headline, Hope, the Sequel. And the drop head there for Obama and company this time around, it's all about fear. There is a big dollop of that in the messaging this time. Fear that Mitt Romney will take the country backwards, but they've got their own fears as a campaign. He points to them. Cash fears, external events, things that could knock them off their stride. You can read it. It's a big article. You can read it at our website, onpointradio.org, or buy the magazine. John will be very happy. It's already heating up out there. Here's an ad from the pro-Obama super PAC. Priority is USA. Here's a little bit.
Now Romney's proposing a huge new $150,000 tax cut for the wealthiest 1%, while cutting Medicare and education for us.
Message, out of touch plutocrat. But here's another from Crossroads GPS, a conservative super PAC backed by Karl Rove, swinging in behind Mitt Romney.
President Obama's agenda promised so much.
We must help the millions of homeowners who are facing foreclosure.
Promise broken.
Romney message there, in effect, promise broken. John Heilman joins us from New York. And John, you say it's demographics versus economy. If the economy really goes south, big trouble for Obama. But the Obama team sees the country's demographics on their side, and in particular in the swing states. Get us down here in the real nitty-gritty of this, John. Exactly where are they looking, what states, and what's the demographic calculation they're making there that looks to them friendly?
Well, let's start with the notion of, you know, the most, you know, if you're running a presidential campaign, we all fixate on the national polls and they show how close the race is. National polls, no one in Chicago and no one in Boston, by which I mean the headquarters of the two campaigns, none of them care about the national polls at all. And there are reasons for that. It's just that, you know, President Obama in the deep South and in Appalachia, you'd be shocked at what he polls at in those places. He'd pull in 30%. In California, he's polling at 55, 56, 57%. So the polls are national polls give you a misperception about where the race really is. What these guys care about is 9, 10, 11 states and who's ahead in those states. Those are all very tight polls, by the way, like the national polls, but they're different in various ways because the different populations of different states and what those populations look like. So the Obama campaign, when you think about where they are, they look at, you know, the one of the great advantages of winning a 53-46 victory in 2008 and a 360-some-odd vote electoral landslide is that they are able to play defense. Mitt Romney, to win, needs to take away at least six states that the president won in 2008. That's a hard thing to do in any circumstance. The president needs to just hold a bunch. He can lose states that he won in 2008 and still get to 270. They look at about four or five different pathways to get to 270 electoral votes. And a lot of that is built on the demographic stuff that we talked about, in particular, the pathway that is probably the most promising for them, which is the Western pathway. And that pathway talks about the president winning New Mexico, as he did in 2008.
Okay.
John Kerry did not win that state in 2004. Colorado, again, a traditionally Republican state the president won in 2008. Nevada, again, a state that George W. Bush won in 2000 and 2004. President Obama won in 2008. He's ahead in all those states, not comfortably ahead, but ahead. And part of the reason why he's ahead in those states is because all three of them have huge Hispanic populations. And the Hispanic populations in those states are the numbers on Hispanics right now in the country. Obama has about a 68, 69 to about 28, 29% lead on Romney in those places. Now, you know, it's now a structural problem for the Republican Party that they are perceived as being an anti-immigrant party. And, you know, back in the old days, I mean, just 10 years ago, the great visionaries, and I say this to annoy liberals, but, you know, the great visionaries of the Republican Party, Karl Rove, George W. Bush, Ed Gillespie, they recognized that because of the growth of the Hispanic population, Republicans needed to be good with Hispanics or they couldn't win national elections. In 2012, the party is so far right on immigration that it has caused – it makes some of these states very hard for Mitt Romney to win. That gap – you can't win a national election as a Republican with less than 38-39% of the Hispanic vote. If you're at 28% of the Hispanic vote, you have a huge problem, and not just in states like New Mexico and Colorado and Nevada, but even in a state like Virginia, where because of a huge influx of Hispanic voters, the Hispanic population there is about – of the Hispanic electorate in Virginia is about 8 or 9%. Now, you lose that piece 70-30, and you have, again, in a close race, you have a big problem. So the Obama campaign looks at, if we can win New Mexico, Colorado, and Nevada, as I said, and win Virginia, a state where they're consistently ahead, and the demographics of the state favor them, the economy is pretty good in Virginia, even though, again, it was a traditionally Republican state, they feel very optimistic about that. If you can win those states I just named, President Obama can get 270 electoral votes while losing Florida, Ohio, North Carolina, and Iowa, which are all big, important swing states. Now, in your mind, and I'm sure many listeners, the idea that you could lose Florida, Ohio, both, and still win the presidency seems impossible. But it tells you something about how the country's changed and about the fact that by putting in a bunch of putting a bunch of states in play in 2008, winning states that, that Democrats normally don't, the president has, as I say, a different coalition, and that maps onto the actual electoral map in a very favorable way for him and gives him different – he can – there are a lot of different ways for him to get where he needs to get.
So
Mitt Romney
–
sorry, go ahead, Tom.
Well,
I'm rabbiting on here.
No, you're great. It's all we're right there on the carrot with you. That's the Western path is the most likely. You say Jim Messina is looking at four or five paths here. There's a Florida path in which he simply takes Florida again
and holds all the Kerry states. You win Florida and hold all the states of John Kerry won in 2004, which are all considered very safe states for the president. Just win Florida and the Kerry states, you're at 270.
Okay. Or there's a Southern path. And on that one, you know, hold on to North Carolina and Virginia plus the John Kerry states.
Then you've I will say, just to interject as we go through, because people might care. I mean, that path, which was a, you know, there's a reason why the Democratic conventions in North Carolina this year, the president really won. I mean, that's a big, huge victory for him in 2008 to win that Southern state. I would say that the Obama people are now much more pessimistic about winning North Carolina in light of the gay marriage announcement that the president made.
Right.
The Southern path is looking pretty tough. They can win Virginia, and they're confident about that, but North Carolina is probably gone.
Midwestern path. He holds on to Ohio and Iowa. And you've got Iowa at play in both your Western path and Midwestern. What about the Midwestern path?
Well, I think they feel still pretty confident about that path. I mean, Iowa obviously is a hugely important state for Obama historically. Now, that's another state that's going to get where they have a little bit harder time now because of the gay marriage thing. But, you know, the president has, you know, Iowa was what launched him into the White House, and they have been on the ground in Iowa now since 2007. And they feel like they can win in Iowa. And Ohio is, by everyone's account, a pure toss-up state, but there's a slight advantage to Democrats. It's the one state in the entire country where organized labor actually matters in a really profound organizational sense. The labor unions in Ohio are a politically potent mobilizing force. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm not dissing organized labor other places, but in terms of actually moving a lot of votes in states that are a swing state, again, organized labor is important in a lot of places. But in terms of the swing states, Ohio is the state where organized labor matters. And the Obama campaign will lean very hard on organized labor there. And they feel like, you know, that's a state that no one's going to know who's going to win Ohio until, you know, the day that the vote takes place on Election Day. Right. But they feel that they got a shot there and they're going to play very, very hard in Ohio.
Now, the sweetest spot, as you say, that the most likely for them at this point as they look out on things, the Western path. And that means holding on in addition to all the Kerry states, but Colorado, New Mexico, Nevada, and you're throwing Iowa in there. That would get them to 272.
Well, they throw, that's their account. Yeah.
Right. And you say the heart of that is this sort of ace in the hole is Latino vote in the Western mountain states.
It's a huge deal. And, you know, you think about, you know, the elements of the president's coalition, the Obama coalition. And as I said before, you think about Latinos, minorities broadly, but Latinos in particular, socially liberal, college-educated women, especially single women, and then young voters. We can talk more about young voters in a minute. But of all of those, the president has leads with all of them. The leads are shrinking at different rates. Romney is closing the gender gap, it seems like, right now. But he's not doing anything to fix the Hispanic problem thus far. And the young voter thing is kind of in the middle between those two, where the president has a lead. He's holding it more steadily than he is the gender lead. But this Hispanic lead is so large that – and where Romney is, he took positions – in order to beat Rick Perry and Newt Gingrich in the primary. He took positions that are very far to the right. They're as conservative positions as you could have on immigration. Mm-hmm. And that is going to be hard. There's not much you can't etch-a-sketch your way out of that. I mean, he's against the DREAM Act. He's employed a lot of rhetoric that's very exclusionary, and it's going to be very hard for him. One of the things that's not remarked upon enough is the power of Univision, which is the Latino
Spanish language television.
Mm-hmm. It is the most powerful for its viewers, the most powerful media organization in the country. It has basically a monopoly on Spanish language TV.
Does it have politics that are obvious?
It has politics that are very obviously tilted to the left, and they are I don't want to say that they don't play it straight on reporting the news, but boy, they are tough on Republicans with conservative positions on a lot of immigration and ethnic-related issues. And they are not just a monopoly, but according to some polling and focus groups, they are the most trusted institution among Hispanics, more trusted than the Catholic Church.
Wow.
So Obama campaign will be advertising very heavily on Univision.
Yeah. Of course, there's all kinds of media out there. We saw there's a Fox and Friends with a four-minute what people are calling attack ad on President Obama. So that cuts lots of ways. Hey, we're going to knock that Obama hat off you for a minute. Put the Romney hat on demographics. Where does the Romney campaign see its biggest opportunity on this map?
The Romney campaign looks at the entire race and says, you know, guys, all this demographic slicing and dicing doesn't matter. What matters is the economy. The economy's horrible. Barack Obama's not managed the economy well. The economy hits Hispanics really hard. You know, yeah, maybe you don't like – I mean, they wouldn't say this way, but their implicit assumption is, Hispanics don't maybe like where Mitt Romney is on immigration. But the foreclosure crisis has hit Hispanics incredibly hard in places like Nevada and in places like Florida. It's hit that group. We can make the argument on economics that Barack Obama has not delivered for you. You know, maybe you like his position on immigration. Well, what has he done with it? He hasn't passed immigration reform. And when it comes to feeding your kids and keeping you employed, he's been a dismal failure for you Hispanics, they would say. So their argument is that economics cuts across all demographics, that for women, for Hispanics, for young voters, all these Obama kids who voted for Barack Obama in 2008, they're all living in their parents' garage now. They can't get jobs in this economy either. So their argument is, forget demographics. Economics trumps demographics. We know this from decades of presidential politics. And if you look in these swing states at the 8 or 10% of independent voters who are still undecided, who are going to determine the election, those people are profoundly, after 3.5 years, they do not feel confident and comfortable with the president's economic management. And what we need to do, Mitt Romney, I'm speaking here for the Romney campaign, what we need to do is hammer that message over and over again. The very simple message, which is Barack Obama is a nice guy. He spent a lot of money. He tried a lot of stuff. You're not better off than you were 3.5 years ago. It would be foolishness to continue down a path that is this expensive and has not moved the needle on the most important issue that America faces.
And something like $1.3 billion may be swinging in behind some version of that message and all the mechanics around it. John Heilman is with us. Big piece in New York Magazine. Hope the Sequel, it's called. This time around, his headline there, it's all about fear. Well, yeah, a big chunk of that from the Obama campaign. John, let me go to our listeners. Bill in Gloucester, Massachusetts. Bill, you're on the air.
Tom, thanks for taking my call. I'm a Democrat, a supporter of Obama, a discouraged supporter. And in my opinion, Obama has done a terrible job of explaining his accomplishments to the country, whether it be with health care or his attempts to stimulate the economy. He hasn't really done that effectively over the past 3 years. His attempts to do more were blocked by the no-vote Republicans in Congress. And so my question is, how can he lay out a really effective campaign when he hasn't really built a good foundation for it? And now everything is, the messaging is all around politics and electioneering and winning.
Right.
But he really hasn't laid down the foundation to do that in the first place.
Well, it's a good question, Bill. Let me take it to John. I mean, there he was with some years not campaigning in the White House, bully pulpit and all that. If he didn't lay down the message then, can he do it more effectively now under fire in a presidential campaign season, John?
No. Is the answer.
So you're hiring our caller. He's your next big analyst colleague.
I think there's that again, in their private moments, the White House would concede a lot of those points. They did a terrible job selling the stimulus. They did a terrible job selling health care. These are big things they did. Some of the biggest things they did.
On the other hand, we heard him on the stump there in Ohio early May, all fired up. And, you know, you can hear an echo of that 08 excitement that he still knows how to rev.
Well, yeah, I don't. The president will in a large group. I mean, again, I'm not. I don't mean
just,
to sound negative.
Just
about
observing.
This.
Oh, be negative.
Look,
I don't care.
No, I'm just. I just mean, you know, for look, the president is a great orator, and if you put a bunch of you put 15,000 people in a space with him, he's going to be able to hit some high notes and get a lot of applause. There's no question about that. Those people are already voting for Barack Obama. They don't matter in terms of the in terms of who's going to determine the election. The problem is specifically to the voters. To the caller's question, is that it's now you can't healthcare is unpopular, and it's even more unpopular than it looks.
Healthcare, the reform, you're saying?
The reform, the reform, not healthcare itself, but the Affordable Care Act. When Democratic pollsters actually go out and look at what people in the country think about it, and again, particularly swing voters, they don't like the individual mandate. They think it's going to cost more, not cost less, and they think it's for someone else, not for them. They think it's kind of a welfare program. Now, you could argue on the merits that all of those are flawed views. And this goes back to what the caller said. The president did a terrible job of selling it when he had to sell it. And by now, in June of June's today?
Yes, no, so tomorrow, nearly tomorrow.
Right? Tomorrow, in June of 2012, you're not going to be able to make the sale. That boat has sailed. To use a confusing pun.
Yeah.
The boat is that the horse is out of the barn on that. You're not going to be able to make the healthcare bill popular.
Which is
among
part of the
voters.
Reason, presumably, they've got to knock Romney down, define him in a way that that didn't sail so high, but we can't go to the other guy.
The president's positive message is going to be two things, and Joe Biden can crystallize it very well. Detroit is still alive, and Osama bin Laden is dead. Those are the two things that are bumper stickerable for them, that people already kind of get it. He saved the auto industry. He killed Osama bin Laden. Beyond that,
There's not a positive message that's simple enough to drive home under these circumstances with this little time remaining.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Obama re-election campaign up against a real challenge and a pile of pro-Romney money. $1.3 billion maybe all in, says my guest John Heilman. He's national affairs editor with New York Magazine. Big piece there, Hope the Sequel, on the Obama re-election campaign strategy and tactics and math. They look at the demographics and the cash. Here's a little bit of a Romney ad highlighting how regular people have been hurting in the weak economy of the Obama years.
When it's all said and done, I'm making $200 a month.
You know, I had to file my own personal bankruptcy. I had to close my business.
I expected great things from the president when he was elected, and now it's just a feeling of disappointment that he hasn't been able to fulfill all of the things, all of the changes that he talked about.
And those big ominous chords behind it there and a feeling of disappointment. John Heilman's in New York. And, John, we've got a lot of response here online. I mean, on Facebook, Christopher says, I'm a moderate myself. Now I'm considering Romney because I think he's much more moderate and less divisive than Obama. I want to ask you about how that plays out as the president goes after Mitt Romney in a very upfront way. On the other hand, here's a web comment, Wings, that says, Romney represents no hope, oligarchy, and a vanishing middle class. Most of the chatter from the right about Obama is pure fiction and fantasy. Money can't buy my vote. There's going to be money on all sides. But what about it, John? As the president attacks Mitt Romney, what happens to that, you know, sort of light-filled, hope-filled image of the man?
Well, let's. I'm going to take these things. There's three things there. Mm-hmm. The second commenter on the web, the one who called Romney an oligarch. Mm-hmm. My guess is that that person is going to vote for President Obama under any circumstances whatsoever, and so therefore, again, with all due respect to him, he is meaningless in this election.
As long as he
shows up, who thinks Mitt Romney's an oligarch and offers no hope, the president's people worry about getting that guy to the polls. But he's not a target of persuasion. He's already persuaded. The first guy, I think it was a guy, mm-hmm. who called himself a moderate, is a really interesting and important case. And it's a fascinating thing. There's a group called Third Way that did a very detailed piece of polling and focus grouping on what they called swing independents, which is to say people who are basically moderates, independent voters in the swing states who are persuadable voters, undecided, mm-hmm. key to the election, these mm-hmm. people, right? They perceive themselves as being not being as liberal as Barack Obama. They are ideologically closer to their perception of Mitt Romney. But they are furthest away of all from their perception of the Republican Party. So that's to say,
why?
They think the Republican Party is very, very conservative and very radical.
I see.
Mm-hmm. They think Romney is a moderate, and they think Obama is kind of a moderate liberal. And they place themselves closer to their perception of Romney. Mm-hmm. So one of the core imperatives for the Obama campaign, and you're seeing this now, but you'll see it throughout the next few months, is to hammer home the message over and over and over again. Mitt Romney is not a moderate. Mitt Romney is a Republican. And the things that he has said on social issues, on economics, on everything that he actually has positions he has taken mm-hmm. in the course of this campaign puts him firmly in the heart of the Republican Party. Do not believe he is a moderate pragmatist people. This is their message. Mm-hmm. He is just like Mitch McConnell. He's just like John Boehner. He's just like George W. Bush. He is another incarnation of far-right Republican social policy and of trickle-down economics. And if they can make Romney mm-hmm. part of the Republican Party, brand him as a Republican, it makes him much less acceptable to moderate voters like the guy who was just commenting on the web.
What's the risk in that scenario, though, of the president coming out looking, as the commenter on the web said, divisive? I mean, when he starts going after, sort of Romney-style capitalism and the rich and, you know, calls Romney retro, if the campaign, that's the message. Don't slide backwards. I mean, for some people, you know, old days equals good. Right now looks difficult. Does the
yes.
president look divisive in making that attack? Mitt Romney etch-a-sketches himself more moderate toward November.
Yeah, Tom, you are like right on the heart of a debate that's happening in the Democratic Party right now, and a really, really and it's growing, this debate. Okay. There were a lot of Democrats, especially establishment Democrats in business and politics, who looked at the first onslaught that the Obama campaign began with last week, which was the attack on Romney's Bain record. There were a lot of establishment Democrats who said, the president's going way too negative, way too soon. He seems too conventional. He seems too tactical. He seems too divisive. And their point is not like in principle that somehow none of these things are, if they work, they're fine with it working. But their point is that the main core asset that Barack Obama has is the brand that he established in 2008 as being above the fray, as not being a conventional politician. His likability is still the if you look at polling between Romney and Obama, on every personal metric, on likability, shares your values, all of those kind of key elements of personality and character, he has a lead on Romney. And what these Democrats who are criticizing the president's negative strategy right now, what they worry is that he's going to compromise himself in on that asset, on the asset of likability. If Barack Obama seems like just another slash and burn politician, that he's squandering, again, the most precious asset he has. And again, it's a really delicate balancing act. The Obama campaign is aware of this. Mm-hmm. They just start saying they think there's slightly more upside potential in trashing Romney and tarring him with Republicanism than there is the downside potential, the risk that they will lose something in terms of the president's brand.
Let me ask you about that, if I may, John, because the president, the positive spin he puts on it is, yes, I'm being tough. Yes, I'm being hard, but I'm trying to save this country from sliding backwards. I mean, you've got them talking about Mitt Romney as an avatar of revanchism, and what somebody in Chicago is saying, they want to freeze him like a bug in amber at the end of the dinosaur era.
Yeah.
Now, that though, it rests on the presumption that he's got a whole lot of people who want to go forward. Romney's got a sort of white picket fence message in no small part that says, you know, let's get back what we've lost. That is at the heart of a lot of his message.
He absolutely does, and now we're going to loop back around in a lovely way to what we were talking about at the beginning of the call. So a lot of this has to do of our conversation. A lot of this has to do with what kind of election you think this is, and you know, I think both sides and the Obama campaign certainly looks at this race a lot more like 2004 than 2008. They're not trying to expand the universe of voters, and they're not really playing to the middle, which they did in 2004.
Kerry Bush.
This is a base mobilization election. This is, how do we get turnout? And this, as I say, goes back to the beginning of our conversation. How do we get our people to turn out? Who are the president's people? We've said this now a couple different times.
Mm-hmm.
Women, minorities, young voters. For those people, the vision of white picket fence 50s America is a vision that either is totally foreign to them if they're 18, 19, 20, 21 years old, or it's a vision of America that they were not full participants or stakeholders in. So there's a quote in the piece where I quote a senior Obama strategist saying, you know, making this comment about Romney. He's the 50s, he's retro, he's backwards, and we are forwards. That's the basic construct. If you're a woman, you're Hispanic, you're young, or you've gotten left out, you look at Romney and say, this bleeping guy is going to take us back to the way it always was, and guess what? I've never been part of that. So if your strategy is...
There's the view
how
right
do I
from
turn,
the heart of Obama land, Obama headquarters.
Exactly right. And if your strategy is, how do I win with these elements of my coalition where I have to drive turnout, that strategy is, you know, that's what that goes to the heart of saying, you know, fine, you know, for a bunch of Republicans and Republican states who still fetishize the 50s, Mitt Romney may be great, but for the emerging elements of the Democratic coalition and of the American electorate, that vision is not nearly as appealing. Again, this is the Obama theory.
Yeah, John, stand by. We've got to give the mic to some callers here. West Palm Beach, Florida, Dan is calling. Hi, Dan. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I'm voting for Obama. I voted for Bush in the past. I voted for Obama because McCain was denying the fact that the economy was
in
a ditch.
Yeah.
And the last time I voted for Bush, thinking that the Republicans were going to handle the economy well, they did not. I don't think Romney is going to do any better than Bush did. So I'm voting for Obama again.
You're all about Obama. You're there in Florida. How do you think Florida might go? What about a Latino vote? Did you have your finger on that pulse, Dan?
Well, I'm concerned about the immigration issue, but utmost in my mind is the economic issues that are facing our country right now.
And my producer note here says you are Latino, but immigration is not your main thing. It's the economy.
Exactly. exactly.
So why are you going with Obama on that? Because of the track record that you saw there, Bush and McCain-wise.
Exactly, exactly. When Bush took over in 2000, we had a surplus in the budget. And he gave all that money away to with tax cuts. And the same thing happened in Florida with his brother. Jeb Bush had a surplus in Florida also, and he gave the money away to millionaires also. He got rid of a tax that we had in Florida, the intangible tax.
Yeah.
After he did that, they had to raise property taxes to be able to make up the almost $2 billion shortfall that created.
Dan, do you think Obama can take Florida, or is that out of reach for him this year?
It's going to be tough, but he may be able to do it. The last governor that got elected, Scott, he only won by 1%. And the unfortunate thing about it was that he had a big support from policemen, firemen, and teachers. One of the things that he did was he changed the retirement plan in Florida, so cops and firemen have to work much longer than before to be able to retire at the same
Yeah, Dan, you're really on it, and I appreciate your call. Latino voter there from Florida going Obama this time, not about immigration, but economy-wise. Let me get one more right here, if I may. Leo in. Thanks, Dan. Watertown, Connecticut. Leo, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. What do you think, Leo?
I'm a pretty conservative Republican, and I think it's all about the economy. And I think Romney should kind of go with the Bain capital. There's a way to spin it. Because would you rather have some rich white guys investing their money into companies or have the government invest their money, our money, into companies like Solera with the same, you know, the market should be the one making the decision about companies. That's why the bailout was bad. That's why when the government gets involved and...
Yeah, no, that's interesting, Leo. You say, you know, Obama can go after Bain Capital, but there may be voters who'd rather have Bain Capital investing, rich white guys, as you put it, than the government investing. And there is that Solyndra case, and certainly we're going to have heard, and we'll hear more about that. Leo, thank you. Aji calling, Columbia, South Carolina. Aji, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I think Obama group need to kind of point that last three and a half years, he basically had to work around Congress and the Senate with his hands tied on his back. He really did not have a whole lot of stuff that he could do on his own to increase the job. Every job proposal he had done, they shot it down.
But is that still cut it? I mean, you know, he's been president. It will be for nearly a full term by the time the election comes. Can he say, Republicans put the handcuffs on me? What does that say about his leadership?
Well, leadership is one thing, but if the Republicans are dead serious about not doing anything for him to help the economy, to me it almost sounds like a conspiracy theory in terms of we're going to just put the brakes on everything so he's not going to get any kind of credit.
Yeah, Aji, you've got a wise eye as well. We've got good callers here. Let me get one more. Thank you, Aji, in Columbia. Let me get one more. Jason, Middlebury, Vermont. Jason, you're on.
Hi, Tom. What an honor to be on your show. I own my own business, roofing business, and if you took a snapshot in my mind of what things were like 4 years ago to now, I mean, I'm booked into next year, and what the right seems to be offering is totally against what anyone like me, just a small-time operator, would ever want. I think Obama is total. The climate has just gotten so much better. Everything's getting better.
Unemployment's still 8.5%. I mean, growth may be slowing down right now. But with all that, you're booked.
No, I'm booked, but I mean, no, I'm speaking for my area.
Yep.
But I mean, everything is getting so much better. I have no fear that Obama's going to win, so everyone just sit back and just watch him win. I don't think we have to worry about a thing. Everything's doing so good. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Jason. Obama's going to take it in a cakewalk, says roofer Jason in Vermont. And John, that's a pretty cool parade. Then here's this from a listener online. It says, generally speaking, until they meet and debate face-to-face, candidates for president usually seem to be somewhat equally matched. That's the case now, this listener writes. Challengers look different standing next to an incumbent president. Some are elevated, some are diminished. We'll see how Mitt Romney looks. What about that? When we get in the home stretch, it's debate time. It'll be week after week. Presumably, they'll be facing one another. How do you think that's going to play out? What does the Obama campaign anticipate?
Well, that's one of those things. You can't really war game a debate this far in advance. I think that, you know, in a very close election, the three debates, and in particular the first debate, matter a lot. And there's no question that if you think about the 1980 race, for instance, where it was a very close race, and there's people in the Romney campaign who think this is going to happen, that it was a very close race in 1980. People had doubts about Reagan. They didn't like Carter. They didn't want to stick with Carter, but they still had big doubts about Reagan. And then when Reagan performed the way he performed in the 1980, I believe there was only one debate that year, he performed. They saw him on stage next to Carter, and it assuaged their doubts. And the president, who became President Reagan, at that point candidate Reagan, surged to a relatively substantial lead within days after that debate. So there's precedent for debates mattering enormously. You know,
but
there
Barack Obama is no Jimmy Carter exactly in the stage presence, I would say.
No, well, no, clearly the case. But I guess I'm saying the dynamic of the notion that, you know, if you are a voter who has who more or less wants to change horses, but still has doubts about the challenger, a debate can give you the confidence looking at the challenger, say, you know that Mitt Romney, you know, I'm ready to take a chance with him. He can do it. And there are other races, as you know, that the debates matter hardly at all. And they matter hardly at all in the sense that the fundamental dynamics of the race are set in stone by that point. By the time Obama debated McCain, you know, McCain would have to have had a miracle in the first and second debates in order to try to close the gap that was set with Obama. I think this race, that both sides think the debates and the conventions and the Republican choice, Romney's choice for a running mate, are all going to matter a lot. Because as I say, I don't, you know, as much as I'm sure Barack Obama's going to win in a landslide in Vermont, I don't think there's anybody on either side who doesn't think this is going to be a razor close race. And in a razor close race, all those big events with national attention, they tend to matter.
And watch that cash meter as we go. $1 billion maybe for the Obama campaign, 1.3 maybe for the Romney campaign. John Heilman hearing here, seeing that makes a big difference in itself, and we will watch how that mounts up. John Heilman, National Affairs Editor at New York Magazine. His big piece is Hope, the Sequel for Obama and Co. This time it's all about fear. John, wow, you're plugged in to the max, and we really appreciate your time and insights. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Tom, it was totally fun. Thanks for having me.
Just terrific. The article's at our website, onpointradio.org. Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.